Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Yeager CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at YeagerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
Hello, everyone who's out there listening. And I want to thank everyone who's listening who is a subscriber or any new people who are listening. All right. And my philosophy is I try to make this podcast two things. All right. To give you information and also, all right, to make you have a little happiness in your life. All right. Hopefully it'll make you smile. All right. Well, we have here Eric Green. And I'm going to read to you because I don't have any idea what he does. All right. He is the director of financial reporting at the Zag company, right? And you're on the NASDAQ, right?
Yeah, we're a public company.
And, all right, now listen to all these designations. This guy has more designations than, you know, there are letters in Campbell's vegetable soup or whatever they call it. All right, he's got an MBA. Where'd you get your MBA from?
Westminster. Westminster College in Salt Lake. It's a little known school, but we're famous for producing Olympic athletes. So,
such as,
I wish I could list them all. I think like last Olympics, they generated over like 20 to 30 gold medalists or not medalists, not gold medalists, medalists.
So really, what you're saying is there's really not famous people, or else you'd know their name, right?
Exactly.
So anyway, but actually, they put out. You, right? They gave you an MBA. And what's your MBA? What's your concentration?
Accounting.
Accounting, all right. And he is a certified public accountant, CPA. And you're a CPA in Utah, is that correct?
That's correct, CPA.
And you have a CMA, you know.
Uh-huh.
Why did you go for the CMA? Any specific reason?
No, well, I'm a glutton for punishment, Phil. That's for
you
sure.
You happen to be around the Prometric Centers or something one day? And there was an opening, you walked in and you said, you know, can I take the CMA? You know, I don't need to be approved. I know I'm approved. All right? But anyway, do you feel that's a good combination, the CMA, MBA, CPA?
I do. I know that the CPA is in the middle of their CPA evolution, but it's been a good one.
Yes, they are in that evolution, whatever that means, all right? I read that article. What exactly, how did you take that meaning, the CPAs in their evolution, all right? Is that a scientific evolution, or what exactly do you think the AICPA is doing, all right?
Well, right now, from what I see, I mean, they're at a breaking point where you're finding that these, you know, these tax professionals and these business analysis professionals and even these IT professionals are kind of going off on these different tracks of their careers. And if you become a tax professional, it's very unlikely that you're going to spend a lot of time working with the SEC. And if you're an SEC professional, you know, it's very unlikely you're going to spend a lot of time with the IRS. And if you're an auditor, you know, it's very unlikely that you're going to spend a lot of time, you know, discussing some of these more nuanced positions. So I think they're trying to still keep the cohesion of the CPA license, but allow for people to kind of specialize within that license.
Hey, guys.
And you're a CIA and a CIA, yep. Right? Well, enough of my talking, all right? Tell us what you do at Zag. You zig and zag? What do you do at Zag?
Yeah, Zag, yes, just Zag. It's not zigzag. You think it would be zigzag. So we're a public company. What Zag does is we, you know, our tagline is we enable a mobile lifestyle, right? So we offer products that help people do that, whether it be batteries for your phone, cases. One of our brands is Mophie. Mophie has a juice pack on their phone that we sell that helps kind of enhance the battery life of your phone. We sell, you know, headphones and other things. We also even sell a product that helps start your car with a battery. And so just kind of a mobile lifestyle company dealing with phones and accessories and things like that.
So what does this have to do with accounting? I mean, where are you involved in accounting? Are you an accountant?
Yes, absolutely. Okay? Absolutely.
Or so, are you on the phone all the time? Well, I don't understand. Are you actually in accounting?
Yeah. So we do the financial reporting, both internally, externally. We do the SEC reporting, and we handle the ad hoc technical accounting. So implementation.
For who are you doing that? Now, what? Is Zag Is Zag in the business of selling all those phones, or do they?
So no, we work with companies like Apple and Samsung and create cases and batteries and things like that that go along with their products.
So are they, I see what it is. So what is, all right, what does Zag do? I mean, do they, in other words, you have associations with Apple, the different products that they put out.
Yeah, right. So some of our products, so we have a house of brands, so Zag's one of our brands, Mophie, Halo, Gear 4. You may see those in Verizon, AT&T stores. But basically what we do is we sell like screen protectors on your phone. So, you know, you don't want to crack your screen when you buy
it. And who manufactures those screen protectors?
Yep, so that's us.
We do that, okay.
We do a lot of that. We also do, again, cases. So drop protection with Gear 4, and then Mophie also does, again, the battery cases for phones if you want to extend your battery life and have it built into your case. And then we do like headphones, earphones, and other things.
Are you a manufacturing company?
So we buy from China as a wholesaler, and then...
There we go. There's killing the economy. I don't want to talk any... No, go ahead.
Yeah.
We are
involved in the design of the products, and we're proud of our designs, that's for sure.
So you buy everything from China and then sell it to Apple, right?
Yeah, we sell it. We actually sell it not directly to Apple. We sell it to like Verizon, AT&T, Best Buy. We do have a little bit of sell-through Apple, like Mophie. We have this really cool 3-in-1 case where someone could put their iPhone and their earbuds and their Apple Watch, and they all charge at the same time. So that's kind of the market of what...
So if someone said to you, in simple words, what does Zag really do? What is the... I mean, yeah, they...
Yeah.
What are they, a seller? Yeah. Are they sound like they're sort of a middleman.
Yeah, so we're a wholesaler, right? You know, yeah, working in the middle, selling, buying, designing the goods, buying them from China, and then selling them through.
Well, you're a publicly held company, right?
Yeah, publicly held,
What was your sales last year, if I can ask you?
Just north of $500 million, so around
$500 million. At Zag, your responsibility as the CPA, the accountant, is you actually file all of the SEC filings for Zag, right?
Correct, yeah, every single one.
What is that, the 10-K, the 10-Qs?
Yep. So annually we have the 10-K, and that's the annual filing that comes with public companies. And then quarterly we have the 10-Qs, and those go through reviews from our auditors. So we push them through that. And then in addition to that, we have other documents that come out, such as an 8-K. You might be familiar with that. Where
yeah, that's the one that for certain events has to be filed within 4 days. Is that it?
Exactly. If we were to buy a company.
Actually, this stuff's on the CPA.
We lost our CFO.
This is on the CPA exam. Let's go over this, all right?
Exactly.
All right?
Yeah.
The 10-K is the annual report, right?
Exactly, yep. And that's followed up. That's audited.
And that contains audited financial statements. And when is that due? When is that due, the 10-K?
Depends on the size of the company. If you are a public company, they have accelerated filers, large accelerated filers. We are an accelerated filer, which means we have 60 days after our fiscal year end to do that. So our fiscal year ends is December 31st.
What happens if you don't get your audited financial statements done by that? Can you get an extension?
We file an extension, and we've never had to, thank goodness.
You file an extension with the SEC.
The SEC, and let them know, hey, we're a little bit late.
All right, so we got the 10-K, the 10-Q, right?
Uh-huh.
And you file that quarterly?
Filings. Yeah, every quarter we just give interim financial information to the stakeholders and let them know how we're doing. Those go through a review of the auditors, and that's different from an audit. The review is, you know, more of an inquiry-based and analytical procedure where you're kind of looking at the company as a whole and kind of making sure that everything makes sense, a much lower level than an audit.
And basically, you could say it's unaudited financials, correct?
Correct. They are unaudited by definition. So we file those quarterly, and then, throughout the year, we have the AKs, which are just the news of something happening in the company that investors may need to know about. And then we have these other things called Form 3s, 4s, and 5s, which are really just about ownership and making sure that stakeholders are aware of any ownership issues, whether a CFO bought stock, sold stock, any key officer, director, and their stock is basically public to the stakeholders.
Any other forms you think a CPA candidate has to know?
Proxy. The proxy statement.
Well, the proxy, yeah, that's, yeah. I'm not talking about from this. SEC forms.
Yeah. There's other forms that are filed. If you go public, you file something called an S1, and did that a number of years ago. And that's kind of just your initial offering, your IPO, your initial public offering. That's filed with the SEC.
That's under the 33 Act, correct?
Correct. 1933 Act is for all of the issuance of stock and shares.
And every time you have a public offering, right? A new public offering, you have to file registration again, do you not?
Correct. So they may have secondary offerings where you may offer additional stock to shareholders if you wanted to raise additional capital. And so you can file those when you need to if you want to kind of open up your equity for additional capital.
And when you are a publicly held company such as yourself, you are subject to the SEC Act of 34, and that's where you have to file those 10-Ks, 10-Qs, right?
Correct, yeah, and that's basically all the notifications to shareholders to make sure that they have viable information to reasonably assess whether the company is worth investing in. And comes a lot of little disclosures that come in, like especially with your 10-K, you have your management discussion and analysis, which requires a lot of work to be able to show to the shareholders, hey, this is what we're doing, and this is why we're doing it, and this is why we think that we're heading in the right direction, and this is why what we think of our previous earnings and things like that.
Now, you're subject to the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, aren't you?
Correct, we are, yep. So we have to get audited financial statements, but that also includes an integrated audit of our internal controls. So I think it's 404, if you know better than...
I don't remember that number, no.
Yeah.
You mean the form 404?
Or just section 404 of the
song. Oh, section 404?
Exactly. Yeah.
You see, I just remember, but this deals with there are exemptions from an SEC 33 filing of a registration under Rule 50. I think 504 is gone, all right?
Yeah.
It's 505 and 506.
Yeah.
That I remember, but no, yeah. I don't know what a 404
is. Well, we don't need to talk about the specific rules or you'll bore your listeners, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this. I want to may take the exam again, I don't know.
We do have an integrated audit. So we have an internal audit team that tests the effectiveness of our internal controls over financial reporting, and they have to opine on that every single year to disclose they feel like that our internal controls are effective. And the auditors will come in and audit that conclusion by auditing our internal controls to make sure that that's the case as well.
And also, the audit firm you have cannot give you certain services, correct? Such as they can't do consulting for you, can they?
Nope, they cannot. They can only do certain services because they are our auditor. I think they can provide limited tax services, but outside of that, if we need help with something, if we were implementing a new accounting standard, or we need consulting on a new accounting system, they could not help us with that.
Yeah, they can't do advisory services, correct?
Nope, correct.
And so who's your audit? What firm do they use?
So we use KPMG. I am a PwC alum, so we definitely have fun with that banter, but...
I know which review course.
We appreciate that.
The PwC, I know that,
yeah.
Of course. But anyway. I wanted to ask you, did you implement all the, like Sarbanes-Oxley system in your company? Did you do that or was it someone else?
So our company's been public since for over 10 years. And okay. So I was not here when Sarbanes-Oxley was brought on and they had to build out the internal audit team, but we've been here to implement the new accounting standards. Those have been some of the major changes and things like that we've been part of.
Now, from what I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, because there's a lot of liability to the CFO under the Sarbanes-Oxley, because don't they have to sign something that they certify that the information is correct to the best of their knowledge?
Correct, yeah. At our company, we have the CEO and the CFO both have to certify that the internal controls operate effectively, that they're not aware of any control deficiencies that have not been communicated otherwise as necessary by public company standards. That is signed every 10-Q, And also in the 10K, they have to sign that, basically that certification that says, hey, best of my knowledge, we're operating well. Our internal controls are operating well. There's nothing that would cause me to believe that the financial statements are misstated.
Now, what happens if they make that statement and it's really, there's mistakes, all right? What's their liability?
So if they, it's based on the knowledge that they have, right? And if normally what we have is we have something called a disclosure committee, and that's kind of a best practices when it comes to public company to make sure that we have all the disclosures in place in our 10Qs and our 10Ks and things like that. Well, as part of that disclosure committee, our audit committee performs quarterly procedures to ask the company, they send out a questionnaire and say to everyone, hey, are you aware of anything like, any of the controls being overridden? Are you aware of any problems with your controls that you're maybe a control owner of that are not operating effectively? From an inquiry standpoint, it provides a little bit of comfort, but they're also auditing throughout the year all the different controls so that they can also come to the CEO and the CFO and they can say, you know, we feel reasonably confident that saying that, you know, our internal controls are operating effectively and you can feel good about signing.
Now, so the CEO and the CFO get paper from, you know, that says, well, the internal controls are fine. But what happens if there's a defect in the internal control? All right, the CEO, CFO signed it based on relying on someone telling them everything was basically okay. All right, what if that happens? What happens if it's a defect in internal control and the CFO and CEO said everything is fine, okay? All right,
yeah.
What's their liability?
Well, they are liable. That's they are the ones that signed that, and that's why it's important, you know, if you, for your listeners who become CFOs of public companies, it's always good to know that you need to get build great teams. You need to have an in-depth knowledge of your processes because you're the one that's signing that. You're directly responsible. You can't point your finger and say, "Well, I didn't think. You know, I thought that it was fine and it wasn't." I mean, you're the guy. And so, obviously, you know, as CFO, you're involved in a lot of top level decisions. It's not necessarily that you know every single control in and out, but you need to make sure that you understand them well enough to be able to opine on that and also trust the people that you hire around you to be able to help build out a solid control environment.
I would see problems if you have foreign subsidiaries all over the place and you're signing that, you know, they do a consolidated financial statements and
right.
You're signing and saying everything's all right in China, Japan,
right.
All right? That's pretty risky.
Yeah, we have operations internationally. We have accounting offices in Europe. And with that, he has to sign on those because we report on a consolidated basis. Those are our companies. And so he has to, it's kind of a risky thing. And, you know, a lot of CFOs get nervous about it. A lot of CEOs get nervous about it. But it just shows the need to have qualified people around you. And this is another reason why having a CPA adds value is that CPAs are needed. They're needed to be able to come.
But no guarantee, even though you have the CPAs.
No, no guarantee. Absolutely not.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Now, is your CFO and CEO, are they men, women?
Yeah, so our current CEO is actually Irish. He's from Ireland, and he's a great individual. His name's Chris. And our CFO is rather new to the position. He replaced our retiring CFO who had hit retirement age, and he's stepping into the role and doing a great job. Both fantastic individuals and set a wonderful tone from the top.
So what designation does you, who's from Ireland? Who's from Ireland?
Our CEO. Our CEO.
And does he have any certification? Is he a chartered accountant or a CPA?
He is not from either. He does not have either. He does not come from an accounting background. He comes from a sales background. He used to work at HP and other companies.
That's the CEO.
Yeah.
Your CFO is from where?
So he is from Salt Lake as well, and he came from KPMG, had several years at KPMG, and has spent time at public companies and rising to the role of CFO here at Zag.
Are they prematurely gray from all the worry?
Well,
that's all I can think about, you know.
Well, we've had a busy year. Our company in the last about 12 months has acquired 3 different companies. And
oh my gosh.
If you can understand the work that goes around doing purchase price accounting on those, It's been a rough go, but it's been awesome, and it's been challenging and fun and crazy, but it's been a lot of work.
What do you do on a daily basis? What would you do on a daily basis?
Every day's a little bit different. You know, I can look at my last week, and I, you know, we're getting ready for the CECL standard, the credit loss standard.
I never heard of it.
We have some
that's a new generally accepted, new pronouncement?
Yes, it's a new accounting standard, ASU, that goes into effect for public companies this next year. It mostly impacts financial services companies. But it does impact all other companies who have any credit that's issued by the company. So accounts receivable, notes receivable, all that gets impacted by the standard.
Is it going into effect for publicly held companies on January 1st, 2020?
Yes. So you know.
But does it also cover, I forget, it covers both publicly held and private, right?
Yes, it does.
Is there a delay to any of those 1 year, or do they both have this effect of going into effect January 1st, 2020?
So for public companies, it is effective as of January 1st. I believe that the FASB just issued a deferral for private companies that they can push it off, I think, 2 to 3 years, which is awesome for them. Give them a little bit more time to get comfortable with the standard, because it's a tough one.
Yeah. Well, that's like the leases, you know.
Yeah.
I think they're still having trouble with the new lease pronouncements. Are they not? Involved with that at all, the new lease pronouncements?
We are fully implemented with 842, which is the ASC for leases. And it was a challenge. I think a lot of people underestimate the amount of time that it takes. But, I mean, it's a great, you know, it's a great amount of work to get ready for it. But it's good. We're ready to go rearing and implement it. So
you're using software to implement that?
We used some software to help us, manage our leases, because there's some, you have to account for every lease and do an analysis on every single lease and have a separate incremental borrowing rate for each lease. And if you don't have a good system for that, it can get messy real quick.
But that's in effect fully for private and public health company on January 1st?
So private companies, it was in effect as of January 1st, 2019. I think there's also a deferral on that for private companies. So more time.
January 1st, 20? When is that going into effect for publicly held companies? Do you know?
Oh, so public companies, it is in effect. So it already came into effect starting January 1st, 2019. So we've already been under the standard for about 12 months.
And now, you feel you know that standard very well?
Pretty well. I mean, it's you have a lot around being a lessor and a lessee.
Yeah, there's a finance lease, and if it's a finance lease, it could be a sales type lease, right?
Yeah, it can get deep. And so if you're a company that both leases and also acts as a lessor to other companies, I mean, it can get real complex real quick.
And you know all those sale and leaseback rules?
No, not everyone. No, absolutely not.
All right, because I was going to quiz you.
Yeah, okay.
All right, but I'll let it go. I don't want to make you foolish on the podcast. you know what? You have a terrific sense of humor. I'm really enjoying speaking with you. All right. So there's another one. And, you know, why do they keep pumping out these pronouncements? And they say they're going into effect. And then all of a sudden they decide, well, probably they shouldn't go into effect. All right. Because what? No one really understands it. Is that the problem? Is that why the delay?
Yeah, I mean, it's, if you look at the last like 3 or 4 years, we have had back-to-back some of the biggest changes to U.S. GAAP in recent history. And you can maybe speak to that, Phil. I'm definitely not as old as you are, nor as wise.
Wait, what did you just say? How do you know that?
But we had 606, ASC 606 for public companies. That was end of 2000 or beginning of 2018. We had to be fully compliant with that standard. That was huge. And you know, some companies like software companies got hit a lot more. But I mean, we're a consumer products company, and I think we wrote 50 to 100 pages of memos just to justify each of our positions underneath the standard. That's quite a bit of work. And then the year after, we go into ASC 842, which is leases. And then the year after, we're going into this new CECL standard. I mean, we're going back to back.
What is the CECL standard again? You said something about it, but what is it exactly?
Oh, sorry, CECL.
Mentioned the word CECL before, but I don't remember what it was.
That's the credit loss standard. So I'm sorry.
The credit loss.
Okay. That's the official acronym. That's what I call it. So I apologize. So I mean, back to back standards. It's crazy. And public companies, you know, we're pretty well resourced. And it's been hard. And so you think about these private companies who don't have the resources to be able to do this. Do you not? I mean, this is an avalanche of information that's coming their way. That I'm grateful that they realize, like, hey, maybe this is too much. And they kind of
Do they really care whether you're a private company or publicly held? Is I mean, they write the pronouncements and they say to the companies, even though the private companies, hey, you have to know it. We don't really care whether you have the resources to hire people or not. All right?
Right.
And I don't think the FASB really cares, do they?
Oh, that's a good question. You may have to ask them. but
you have their phone number. I think they're in Connecticut, aren't they, someplace?
Yeah, Norwalk?
Yeah, right outside of the city.
Yeah.
I
think that hopefully the private companies will have time to get ready for these because, you know, as a CPA, you're going to need to know these for the rest of your life. I mean, these are I'd say here to stay. And so, you know, if you're a new CPA coming into the profession, you're going to know 606. You're going to know 842, which is leases. If you go into the financial service industry, you know, CECL, the credit loss standard, is going to be your bread and butter because you're going to need to understand that extremely deeply to be able to apply it if you're in financial services.
Where did you learn all this stuff to do all of these SEC filings and, you know, the Sarbanes? You do all these filings?
Yeah, so I do.
How many people work with you, though? Yeah, you're not the only one who does it.
Well, I've got people, that work with me to help prepare them. I'm obviously the only preparer, but I oversee the whole process to make sure everything's good.
How many people is it taking your company to prepare all these documents?
Well, because they go through so many levels of review, I mean, the SEC documents go through legal and lawyers and have to go through the board of directors. They all have to look at them. And you have the CFO and the CEO who obviously are signing their name to them. They want to make sure they're okay. And then you have the preparers themselves, and that goes through several levels of review. And then you have the KPMG or the auditors who have to look at it. So there's a lot of hands in the pie. That's for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like it's so complex to implement and keep it up.
Yeah,
but you have no choice, you know. You're a company.
Yeah, and thank goodness there's good software out there. We use something called Wdesk, and they help us keep our eggs in line to manage the SEC reporting.
So, let's go back. Where did you learn how to do all this stuff?
So, yeah, I learned a lot of it from PwC, and then I had to go out and search out some trainings that exist to be able to do it. Because you're right, it's not something that's like easily obtainable. It's kind of a niche area of understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
To deal with the SEC. And so they had some trainings out there that I had to go pursue and learn.
When you were hired, your first company was PwC that hired you?
Correct. I was a controller for a healthcare company before then called Orient.
Okay.
And so I took a pretty unconventional route
where
I am right now. But I decided I wanted to go back into public accounting. I got the experience I've been at Zag ever since I left public accounting.
So you were in that health company and then you went into public accounting?
At
PwC, is that right? PwC?
Yeah, PwC, that's correct.
Is that where you learned all about the SEC filings and all that?
Well, I audited them, but it's one thing to audit SEC filings, it's another thing to prepare them. And so it gave me a good foot in the door, but when you get in there, you have to learn. And I had some good mentors who had been working with the SEC for many years who kind of got me up to speed in a lot of ways. And it just shows the
power. Very lucky. How many people have those type of mentors?
Exactly. So they really kind of helped me get up to speed in a quick fashion.
Question, did they hire entry-level people or do they want experienced people?
For SEC reporting?
Yes.
They do hire some entry-level people into SEC reporting. I'd say that's more rare. They usually want to have someone who has an accounting base to be able to build on that in SEC reporting, because SEC reporting is taking all the pieces and fitting them together, kind of like a jigsaw puzzle, right? You have to understand all the little pieces and how they fit together. And so most companies that I've seen require some accounting or auditing experience and then bring you in either as like
a CPA. Do you have to have a CPA when you come in?
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, you know, I think I'm giving the impression that all you do with that company is SEC filing. You do have an accounting department, right?
Yeah, we do.
Right. We hire accountants, because we've been concentrating on the filings, you know.
Yeah,
which I think people should know about. It's
it's a fun area, and I enjoy it quite a bit. And if there's anyone who's interested in it, I think that it can be a rewarding place to be.
Now that this interview is over, tell me, are you still feel like this has been fun?
Oh, absolutely. We've had a great time here too.
You'll get your check in the mail for that.
Yeah, thank you. Well, no,
I appreciate it. You know what? It's been a lot of fun for me. I'm very impressed with your background. I'm sure we hardly touched upon it, but That's terrific. Oh, and yeah, I forgot you mentioned about you won that award, right? I didn't. Did you win an award for the top, the 40-year-old, 40?
Yeah, uh-huh. So the CPA practice advisor listed me as
right.
40.
Has that helped you at all, getting that award in any way?
It has, and it's been good publicity for our company, because thankfully my company wants me to succeed as well. And they like to be able to showcase their employees that are doing well. So it's been a good thing for me.
Congratulations. No, that's terrific.
Thank you.
Most of the people I talk to who obviously are under 40 have won that award. And
thank you.
That's great. Congratulations on that.
Well, Phil, it's been a pleasure, and you've been an absolute delight to talk to.
I can't thank you enough for doing this. I learned a lot. I really did.
I learned some things today too, Phil, and I appreciate you getting out there and getting to know people, and I benefited from this as well. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you once again. All right. We want to thank Eric Green for being on the podcast. Have a good day, and remember, be good to each other. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Yeager CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Yeager CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on YeagerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.